Today's program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Oh, the distant strains of heavy metal music raining down on the ears of Bushwick's finest, the retrofitted, repurposed studio out here at Roberta's Pizza. And this is Eating Disorder on the HeritageRadio.org network. I am Crazy Legs Conti.
And I am the Rev Spiro.
Do we have an announcement about Where's Paldo? Do we have a Where's Paldo segment?
Paldo was going to show up. Chef Paldo, our other host, was going to be here tonight.
He sent an email.
He emailed. He did. Emailed. He showed. He sent the email at the last minute. Said, "Nah, I can't do it.
Can't do
I
it.
Can't, I can't."
He made
and
the effort.
Then I'm going to do the Paul voice. Like, "Nah, I can't do it. I can't do it."
Weeks from now, there may be an announcement. We can officially say, "Where's Paldo?
Where's Paldo?
But, where's he been?"
But just understand that Paldo is in a world saving project. Where Godzilla is, you know, fighting Japan, and he's in there and just trying to save, you know, the foodies in Japan.
All right. Let's hope it's the Matthew Broderick Godzilla, not the Bryan Cranston one. I had an interesting week, but first I want to check in with you after seeing you chain smoke two cigarettes. How is the hypnotized no smoking going?
It worked up until whoever hasn't listened up to now, I've been getting hypnotism to try to stop smoking. It worked up and until this week. I really wasn't smoking up and until the fact that I got to travel tomorrow, and I hate traveling. I really do. I gotta go to Miami tomorrow, and tonight, half my shit is packed.
How many Speedos?
I've got like the Spiro Speedo, which is like kind of like, you know.
Oh, like a unitard?
Yes, exactly.
One shoulder
yes.
or two? Like a,
no, one shoulder.
A
come
one
on.
Shoulder. So it's like the
Mankini, I
yes.
believe.
That's the Mankini. I don't mean to, the Andre the Giant. Wrong.
Mankini. And pasties to go with it.
That's our mystery guest for the moment. He will be introduced, but I guess I should start off by saying my news, which I perhaps tempted you earlier.
Yeah, I know. You've been fucking with us.
Well,
all right, all day. I've got news. It's not good news. It's not bad news,
still,
but I got news.
I've been in New York for over 20 years. I've had many jobs in menial labor. Ultimately, uh-huh. I'd like to live off my creative endeavors. Writing TV and film, but as you do find yourself having to pay rent. So I've had lots of jobs in the service industry, and I've been fired from just about every job I've ever had. And last night I had the unique experience of quitting a job.
Get out.
I tendered my resignation at 7:15 p.m. And was out the door at 7:16 p.m.
From which place?
Well, I've been bartending on the Upper East Side.
Right.
I worked for the same group for 8 months as the sole bartender, six nights a week in the meatpacking district. And last night was the holiday party, which was somewhat unexpected. This is a group that owns five different establishments, of which two out of five are successful. And the one I work at is the tax write-off. I was dressed for the holiday party. I had my brand-new pink-striped Scottish knickers. I had my polyester purple ascot. I had my Japanese Pharrell hat knockoff. I was set to go. And I've been working a lot of doubles on Sundays. I've been giving up my weekends working Saturday night and Sunday doubles. 12 hours on your feet. I know back of the house works very hard. Front of the house, you're legally supposed to get a break. I've not gotten any breaks. And we had a coupon-wielding couple in yesterday for 3.5 hours, an unlimited brunch. They did not tip their server, and I'm standing there. I mean, granted, 16 candles was on the TV, so that wasn't so bad. But then later in the evening, as we prepared for our holiday party, we were told that the kitchen would close at 7 and the restaurant would close at 8. And the general manager showed up maybe 5 hours late at 5 p.m., poured himself a beer, ordered some food, and was griping about certain things that I thought were knowledge to all. Our schedule for the week wasn't out yet, which is always problematic. And at 7, I was at the bar, no customers. I'd made maybe $23 in the course of the day. I said, oh, the kitchen's closed. And at 7:15, the general manager went out on the street and convinced four people to come in for dinner, which in New York culture, I can't imagine being cajoled into a restaurant is going to be a...
No, in Coney Island, I mean, yeah, into the sideshow, like, maybe, but I mean, you know.
And then I said, well, are they just drinking? He said, no, they're eating, and you don't want to work here, and you don't have a good worth. And if you don't want to work here, and I just cut them off and said, well, just mail me my last check. Now, I had gotten permission to drink canned beer from the Duane Reade next door, but I was only on my second Miller Lite, and it was early into the Patriots game. So some might say later, years from now, that perhaps I quit so that I could catch the rest of the game, which I did at a variety of establishments.
And sadly, you are a Patriots fan, but anyway.
I am a Patriots fan. I have a late-night trip to Boston planned in celebration, but I did go to American Trash for the rest of the half, down to Dempsey's, and then the fourth quarter Professor Tom's, where people went absolutely crazy. Now, crazy is a good term to use in the service industry. Is you should not, in a professional sense, be walking out in the middle of a shift tendering after working for the same company for a year. But then again, the night before, for someone's birthday, they gave out pot cake. They had made a pre-shift meeting where people were eating cake that was laced with marijuana. I happened to not do marijuana, so I gave my slice, which I didn't actually know was laced with marijuana, to this waiter. And I said, hey, since I don't do it, tell me when it kicks in. And John, the waiter, said, well, I was already high when I got here, so that's not going to be much help. He serenaded everybody in the restaurant. He got very high. But I felt bad for Muhammad, the teetotaling Muslim busboy who had a couple of spoonfuls, not realizing, and he had to go home with a pot headache. So it's not the most professional environment, but I was not the most professional last night. But what can I say? I quit. Now, service, service industry. Why don't you introduce our guest? Because this is a man who is very knowledgeable about the ins and outs of the service industry.
Not only very knowledgeable, but I mean, I want to introduce Jim Hsu.
Welcome, Jim.
Jim is an old school New York entrepreneur from my age group, right? And I'm not gonna tell.
Well, you met him in the '90s.
We met him in the '90s when we were young.
When the world was young.
When the world was young. The last great generation in the '90s. Okay,
that's never been said.
No.
Was that after Generation Y? Generation YouTube.
No, Generation Black.
Generation '90s. All right.
All right.
The Saved by the Bell generation.
When he wrote the Generation X book, oh, fuck him. All right. But that being said, call this slackers. They call this, they call this the tech generation, whatnot. But it was a fun time.
Sure.
And I met Jim Hsu when he opened a place on 11th Street called ST Bar. And it was, it felt like it was built into a what looked like a brownstone or an apartment building. You want to?
Yeah, I mean, that's about right. I don't know if you actually know this, but the lineage of ST Bar originates actually at Mars Bar.
Oh yes,
if you might remember,
Mars Bar was considered for the longest time the most dangerous bar in New York. Really, is the most dangerous bar to go the bathroom in. You could catch hepatitis by lifting up the seat. But it was on 2nd Street and 2nd Avenue. And was one of those classic places that even I, now I live a block from it.
The seat gave you a staph infection.
I've lived a block north of it for 20 years, but for a long time I was actually afraid to go in there until I went in there one New Year's Eve at 5 a.m. and I absolutely fell in love with the place. Right. And went there for 15 years before it closed, so much so that when film crews would come to interview me for competitive eating, I'd bring them down there. We'd shoot outside, and then guys, these older crusty punks would be like, yeah, you're gentrifying the neighborhood. And I'm like, I don't think they live here. And I live a block away. But the Mars Bar is a great bar.
Yes, and it's absolutely magical because I think any place that you can get a staph infection just from going to the bathroom it already tells you it's not a dive-themed bar, which is kind of irritating. Mm-hmm. Because this bar was actually the crown jewel of a man who owned a bar on Hank Penza, who owned a bar on Bowery called Hank's Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
I think at some point it was also called the Stray Bullet Lounge, the provenance of which I don't really know.
Right.
But the great thing about you can catch a staph infection in a few different bathrooms. At Mars Bar, if you got one, it could be from the bathroom next door because there would be a hole ripped in the wall. And that gave it
and that was somebody's extra, apartment, actually.
Right. And that was like, you know, all kinds of other things were going on, which was like a very, like, you know, action-packed for a place that was so tiny. And I think like so many great ideas that came from Mars Bar, I had just gotten out of college and fallen in love with acting, which is a great thing for anyone, especially if you're a Chinese kid from the Lower East Side and therefore completely unemployable. So I got drunk enough to say, you know, I'm not going to be able to get a job after mm-hmm. looking for all of a day. Because that was like exhausting. That was exhausting. I mean, I was 20. I wasn't even old enough to drink in the bar, and I was having these great ideas. I was like, oh my God, I got to go and get this job. I looked at two or three places and like couldn't get a job and decided that I'm going to open my own bar. So, you know, that also sounds like a great idea.
Which you could do in the 90s in the East Village.
Exactly.
Hence Coyote Ugly, hence a lot of places.
Absolutely.
Coyote female-owned, but, you know, cheap rent. And
yeah,
Melissa Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, which should have been called Drink, Puke, Lust instead. She was a bartender at Coyote Ugly in the early days.
I would have bought that book.
You would have bought that book, as would have all of us.
Absolutely.
We bought a lot of shots at the bar. I think we deserve
the
book.
We supported it. We supported that. But fortunately, the bartender at Mars Bar said, all my friends were mocking me, and the bartender thoughtfully said, no, I think Jim would do a great job.
Boom, that's all you need.
Done. You just need you need an unindicted co-conspirator
right.
in any great idea. So anyway, so we opened this bar on 11th Street between B and C.
Which was
on nothing.
Insane in 92.
Well, and there's a book... Alphabet Cop about really a couple years after that. Yeah. The birthplace of crack in the 80s was Tompkins Square Park. Yeah. And the most often trafficked drug corner was not 116th and Pleasant,
nope, not at all.
French Connection. It was actually 4th and Avenue D.
Yep, absolutely.
And there's some great stories out of that area.
Yeah, I mean,
so to think
to be...
about being a business owner is basically like going, oh, is that the apocalypse happening 10 blocks down?
Well, I mean, that
let's
was the thing.
A,
I mean, in the 90s, it was starting to gentrify, but at the same time, back in the early 90s, we had a code. It was like Avenue A, you're all right. Avenue B, be careful. Avenue C, you're crazy. Avenue D, you're dead.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's actually pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I really kind of look askance at how police relations have really deteriorated with the public. Because at the time, you know, my local cops really helped me out.
Right.
So as you might posit a question to a police officer in a hypothetical way, like, hey, you know, Pete, if you, let's say, knew a guy who was working in a place, was really working really late and he didn't really feel safe, and he said, I get you. Look, you can get a gun license from the city of New York. Talk to this guy, get this. And stuff. Well, it's not like there's a lot of money. I just think that I might be killed anyway.
Right.
So Pete said, you mean you? I mean a theoretical person.
Right. A theoretical me.
And he said, okay, let me cut you off one more time. And you're not allowed to take this line because one of these days I'm going to write it into something. And that is, look, man, do what you got to do. I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Ah, there it is. See?
Well, thank you. There's a little, you know, little community. This is actually, I think it was Dinkins, and it was like under CPOP. It was like, oh, community policing.
Yeah.
Like, this translates. This totally gets to me. So I opened this bar, and now the concept of which sounds insane, that like, hey, we'll wrap up the show. We'll go down the block and buy a drink from a guy who's not older than the liquor behind the bar.
Perfect, yeah.
That's nuts. But people totally did that.
But it was a great bar. I mean, it was
a great place.
What were the hours? Were you open?
Oh, 4 to 4.
Four to four.
And,
okay.
and plus, it was there was things going on back then. It was before there was spoken word happening. There was what do you call?
Well, it's a lot of performance art.
And people were you could also afford to do that stuff.
But it was also but back then it was also when the acid jesting was happening, and we had the what do you call the
giant step. Huge, yeah.
Yeah, those kind of guys, and which was kind of like DJs mixing with musicians, and it was fun as all hell.
And all those things were new, and you could play with them because it didn't cost $3,000 to share a studio apartment with someone.
Yeah. Yet the place still felt like the apartment on the first floor.
Yeah,
that's my favorite part about his first place was it felt like I was walking up into somebody's house party. That was the best part. It was a bar. It was absolutely a bar.
There was a cash register there.
On the show prior, we've had lots of
just like Spiro's apartment.
Yeah, we've had lots of people on Peter Herrera. We've had a lot of people on who've said that the one thing that is the intangible in opening a bar or restaurant is that atmosphere, is that scene, and you want people to feel as if they've stepped into your home that you're hosting them. A different kind of home, obviously, you know, north of Save the Robots, a pretty interesting after-hours club. But how long did that last for?
I ran that for about 4 years. It was under my apartment, which I can only file under a widening file that I have marked as grave tactical errors. to open a bar that is open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then be surprised, and I have like a gun behind the bar, which seemed like an illegal gun behind the bar. Well, the cops told me it was okay. Yeah. And then, you know, the next thing you know, you've got one in the chamber with the safety off, you know, a record skipping with like the smaller part of a bottle of Black Label, and thinking, hey, I'm the only guy in this room. Why shouldn't I kill myself? Somehow these things are connected. I haven't figured it out yet.
We laugh at suicide on this
Yeah, you know what? My shrink loves it because I think she's got under like a 3-car garage off of that story alone.
So then, 4 years, the length of time most people go to college, you have graduated, in essence, into New York nightlife.
Well, okay, this is a great thing. You know this, you must have, there's a parallel here with competitive eating because it's all about not knowing when to stop. So 2 years into that, and this is like the beat nut, like some of the beat nuts are DJing at the bar, like Spooky. The guys who are playing piano are getting like signed by Warner Brothers. And like I get questions like, Drew Barrymore is here? And I'm like, does she want a drink? You'd better serve her.
Yeah, yeah.
And these things are kind of happening. And the DJ asks me, hey, man, I want to open a club. And I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
So why not? And he takes me to this lovely location on Houston Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. I mean, it was right.
And wait, what year was that? Do you
remember? That's 94.
All right. Now, here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand this, but in 94... there was nothing on fucking Houston Street.
Wait, not nothing. Okay, because there was John's, pet shop. If you know John's, anyone from the neighborhood knows John's. Okay, there's roaches all over New York, but there were only so many places you could buy pet roaches.
Yeah,
and John's was one of those, or a mini bike, or rollerblades, or a rabbit.
But from the standpoint. There was downtown Beirut, but that was further down downtown.
There was also Yonah Schimmel's and $5 oral sex.
Yeah, but there was really nothing on Houston Street, right by
Yonah Schimmel's is still there.
Yeah,
that was there. It's a very dense
from a nightlife standpoint. There was nothing there.
No, the theater that has since become the Sunshine Theater,
which was empty for years
for a long time, it was the old Vaudevillian Theater, beautiful space. My buddy Raphael, the heterosexual hairdresser, said, one day, I'm going to own that building. And then later I said, Raph, you don't own it, but we can go see a movie there tonight if you want. So, but
you need
so
a dream.
Moving to Houston or moving
we
the place
moving
to
Houston.
Houston.
So, so my DJ, Rob Lumerman, he brings us over and shows me this place. And we're stepping over crack vials.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, the random crack vials that you just see on the street, but this is like industrial crack vials. Like, they got gold tops, they got silver tops, they got jumbos, they got like a fake wall, they got a fake floor. There's a skylight that's got a security gate on it.
Yeah.
Because why? Because Spider-Man? And there's just all kinds of bolting. There's Rottweiler cages. You go down to the basement. There's planks of wood with 9mm rounds in it. And I'm like, hey, you know what?
You got to test it out. You can't just take it upstairs.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to pop a cap in somebody. Yeah. You don't want to be like, well rehearsed.
Just give me a moment, sir. I just
Hold
need
on.
This is the first time I'm using this gun.
Right? I mean, I don't want to put the words in the, into the mouths of our local law enforcement, but I think that my local cop, Pete, would be like, oh, yeah, you better get used to using that weapon.
Yeah, yeah. So in the Monopoly world of 94 New York, this would have been the boardwalk or park place of crack houses, basically. Yeah, that you're taking
I would say it's a pretty top-level crack house. I mean, the guys who are dealing weed from the place, the head shop next door told me it was like, that's a good spot.
Like, man, one day we want to work there.
Yeah, you want to talk to somebody? Because my man Julio, I mean, you know, I'm just saying.
Right.
Like, hey, I got you. I walked away from that going like, I feel pretty good about myself. I have no idea what that man said.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I'm like part of an international.
We're gonna get back to your story in regards to the East Village and Houston Street in a second. We're gonna take a quick break. This is Eating Disorder. I am the Rev Spiro, and this is Crazy Legs Conte.
And we're in New York in '94.
Yes, we are.
And we'll be right back.
We'll be back in a minute.
Listening to Popemobile by Knife Show.
Super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
This is Eating Disorder. I am the Rev Spiro here with Crazy Legs Conte. What's up?
We are fascinated because we've been taken back in time to Houston Street, 1994, with Jim Chu. So let's talk about dollars.
Dollars.
What was
and
the
cents.
Rents? What would have been the rent when you started your second establishment?
It was $2,000, which was twice the rent that I was paying. Which I was like, I don't know, man. Houston
That's
Street.
Rent control apartments today.
It was like it's $2,000 for a 2,000 square foot place with a 900 square foot basement.
Yeah.
And you know, I signed a 10-year lease again. Thinking about, I do property management now, and I think about what that might have been like for a grown man to look at the eyes of a child and say, "Sure."
Mm-hmm.
Cut me a check, kid. You can have it. Well, I guess coming off of like the crack dealership that was going on, and they're like, sure, guy.
Yeah.
Why not?
You're going to have loud music and drunk people? Absolutely.
He's like, we'll take that. From gunshots and like, you know, zombie crackheads. Yeah. It's like, that's an improvement.
Yep.
So we had the place for 4 years. Our opening night was, you know, and this was in that environment. So our opening night band was Rasputina, which is like this great band.
And the place went through three iterations.
We'll
run through them quickly.
Okay.
So the first
was Den of Thieves, and that in itself had another iteration. So we were being chased down by the dance cops. I think now the Giuliani's
the cabaret
face.
License.
Cabaret
for those
laws.
Who don't know, in New York,
the
was this amazing
cabaret laws.
Put in to kind of prevent the Cotton Club from having any fun. Yeah. So to basically say to an establishment that was filled with black people, unless you have a cabaret license, you're not allowed to dance. But that's not a dance performance. You know, that meant you couldn't have people moving to music.
No.
The law.
Our friend Bobby, he's one of our five listeners, and he's a lawyer.
Shout out.
And he always says, he's like, do you realize that you can define that law by saying three steps in...
Three people moving rhythmically with 1 foot off of the floor.
Yes, that was actually it.
Which is the same as a West Palm Beach orgy, but go ahead.
Also true.
Yeah. So Giuliani brought back the cabaret law. To prevent basically really big clubs and super fun.
Yeah.
And so you were affected by this.
We were deeply affected by it. And so we ended up throwing a bunch of furniture there and a stopgap. And then, you know, something I ended up doing later was sort of converting it into a multi-purpose space. And in that time, we were able to be hosts for the first year of this Fringe Festival, when they were like, we don't know what we're doing and we have nowhere to go. I was like, hey, absolutely. I know something about that.
Because it was an improvement over the poetry readings done by two of our co-hosts, right? Chef Paul and the Rev would do poetry.
Yeah, I know, because we would be nodding out in the back, hopefully mumbling poems.
How long, you know, did to Den a DJ? Go?
we had about a 4-year run of that, okay. and then Rob Loomerman, who had brought me into the business and also brought these great DJs, like Cosmo Baker, who is now like a touring DJ, and a lot of people that were working with Junior Vasquez and big club DJs, and a young guy that worked at the local record store, his name was Danny Teneglia, would come and play. Wow. Fatboy Slim played for a case of beer. It was that kind of place. Mark Ronson stopped by. And I was like, all right, he seems cool. but at some point, he brought Eric Rasmussen over, who had this concept for a 60s airplane bar. And I was like, well, that does sound really cool. And he worked for Keith McNally. So I was like, you work at places where I'm not allowed in. So that's got to be a step
up. So in the same location, you flipped it to its second iteration.
In 30 days.
And it became the inside of an airplane.
Insane. Where did you... it was Idlewild. And you had the interior of an airplane in your club. Right. Where did you get the airplane shit?
Okay. This is the early days of the internet. The actual only things from an airplane were the seats, which Rob had found on the very first version of Craigslist. Like, found like airplane parts, called someone in California, and I'm on the other line going like, who are you talking to? It's like, well, it's, you know, it was like, you know, Encino Airplane Depot, Parts Depot.
Right.
And she said, I need 40 airplane seats. It was like, well, I got DC-9 sitting out back. Will that work? And I'm like,
I don't know. Yeah.
It's like, do we need a DC-8, DC-10? Yeah. It's like, she's going to hang up on me.
Yeah.
She knows I don't know what I'm talking about.
We'll take
about.
The lot.
And he's like, are you sure you have them? And you can hear the distinct sound of two fingers spreading apart Venetian blinds.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking at him.
Right. Boom. We'll take the lot.
Yeah. The rest of it is like drywall and fabric and stuff that we made
up. What was the bathroom? Was the bathroom an airplane bathroom or not?
No, the bathroom, we did sheathe it in stainless steel.
Anticipating a lot of requests for entering the Mile High Club.
that turned out to be a good tactical decision.
Yes.
And then some wallpaper, fabric that had later needed to be, well, burned.
Yes, but Wallpaper Magazine claimed it to be the best bar in the history of bars.
They were into it. We had touched upon some notion in the world that was happening at the time. Austin Powers came out like that year.
Yeah, right. It was right. Perfect.
And also that year, a little airline company came to us and said that we want to start this airline. I was like, who starts an airline? I mean, and you know, being the age that I am, you mean like People Express? Or a startup like Braniff? Yeah. Like, no one is like, even out of your five listeners, they're like, what are those things?
Yeah.
Google.
Yeah.
Must Google. Mm-hmm. So JetBlue came by. They're like, you've got blue airline seats. We've got a blue airplane.
Boom. JetBlue launches on Houston Street.
And it's in our little bar. And the next thing you know, Delta's calling. I mean, it's just weird.
And then the third iteration
was White Rabbit. Because curiously, after 9/11... having an airplane themed bar less awesome than 9/10.
Yeah.
So on 9/10 it was like airplane, but and then you know it was just and then being blocked off and all these like horrible things happening.
No, but my out of the three of them, my favorite, though I loved Idlewild from the standpoint of its inception was the idea of it. I loved White Rabbit, and the reason I loved White Rabbit is, one, you let Tokian Magazine, who I worked with, have our Christmas party.
Tokian
there.
Was fantastic. Yeah, yeah. It was like, oh, bring back the crazy folks.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I love the art. White Rabbit had just this wonderful open space feel, and it was about the art. And I really loved the fact that there was actually, it felt like a throwback. It felt like, oh, wow, look, another bar into the 2000s that still gives a shit about fucking art.
Yeah, and we were able to really get, and that was really what I hungered for after Idlewild. It was like, it really was like a one-trick pony. And you know, every night people coming in with like with airplane jokes, and you're just like, they're having fun. They're having fun. Yeah. I'm like, no, let the voice be quiet. Let's see what I'm doing.
But we fast forward to 2015. You've taken everything you've learned or that you enjoyed from all of these other places.
Yes.
And you turned it into Specials on C?
That's right.
And tell us where that is.
And Specials on C was on 12th Street and Avenue C. And right now
Well, tell us what it is.
Okay, what it is. Okay, 12 Specials on C is a bodega that was abandoned a year before Sandy and then got hit by a hurricane. Is there a pattern here? I'm like, ooh, disaster. Sounds delicious. And it was. It's actually owned by the city. It's part of the Housing Preservation Development. It's part of the Affordable Housing Program. But they keep that space open because they're looking to renovate it, but it's also working on city time. So they're renovating it.
Tell me about it. I'm trying to get an appointment for a municipal ID.
There you go.
April 1st, 8 a.m. That's the earliest I could get.
It's hard to take seriously. Yeah. And so looking on their schedule, and they themselves were saying it's going to be 4 years. So we got a month-to-month lease, and we had it for about 13 months.
From the city. So that's doable.
It was totally doable for a very reasonable rate. Which was actually supported by a great company called Gotham Smith, which makes 3D printed jewelry made by robots.
Wow. Okay.
Because you're getting this? You're like random.
That's how things happen. You
know? And like apparently the robot people were really interested. Like, tell me about your organic interface.
Yeah. Because normally they get a lot of calls like, I'm a very nebbish, closeted guy. I'd like to propose to my girlfriend. Do you think you could have a robot do it with something they've created? Like, yeah.
That is.
Please hold.
That's in the inbox.
Yeah.
And then you hear a whooshing sound. And
yeah.
So we ran it because I had actually for years had a friend who was working on a bodega-based project. As all of us do, just trying to hold on to all of these threads. I definitely have a sense of the world being like a giant game of concentration. You're like, oh, green shoelace. Wait for
Boom.
It.
Boom. Yes. You've got it.
Wait. Just wait. Cut to 8 years later. And sure, he was always telling me that he wanted to do an installation in a bodega. I said, that's great. I think a bodega-themed project, art, commerce, art. There's a really thing we can discover here. He said, no, in a bodega.
Yeah.
So I tried to explain to him how in the worst neighborhood in the world, the bodega is still the most expensive real estate anywhere, and that people will step over warm bodies to be like, hey, man, I hate what happened to Roberto. But you know,
yeah, I need a bag of Fritos.
Yeah,
some of that.
And this bed's gonna go bad, and I get some Malta India and like a bag of diapers. Like that's gonna happen. And then, sure enough, I get a bodega dropped in my lap. I call up Ray. This great streeter. I said, and I call him up and say, but he had always said, like, you can do it, man. You can do it. It's like, what have I done in my life that makes you think I can upset like the economics of a world? And sure enough, I'm like, I got a bodega. I said, I knew it.
He was ready for the call.
He was ready. I said,
that's New York. You got to be ready for the call.
Exactly. You
know
this.
Tell everyone you know your dream, even if your dream is to do art in a working bodega, and then know.
And then all of a sudden,
when the call comes,
and go one better. The alley oop is a play you make without the ball. I'm so Ray. What are you up to? He's like, I'm working on the bodega show.
Boom.
Where's it gonna go? I don't know. I'm like, all right, well, guess what? And that happened. It kicked us off, and we ended up it was just an improvisation, a kind of improvisation you can't afford to do in New York anymore. That $2,000 space that I had, and we kind of, even though this thing is called eating disorder, we did skip over two restaurants that I built. But I started with the rent of my first two places was $3,000 together. Mm-hmm. My last two places were $30,000 together.
Yes. Wow.
A little bit different for a guy who thinks like I do. Yeah. Like that really, I don't know how that was going to work. But having this sort of low overhead, we built into this, like, let's see how it was 30 days at a time, and let's just see who wants it. And it turns out there's lots of people. One of my favorite of which I have to say was a Lickestra.
Mm-hmm.
Which I just said yes to. It was like, I want. Lickestra, want.
Which is
an ice cream orchestra. And I think it's actually one of the few things you can actually still just Google Lickestra, and it won't be like, oh, there's 800 hits here.
Right.
So it is the Lickestra, and it is a computer-powered, really basic sort of computer-powered. I think it's Arduino, one of these like small things. four ice cream cones mounted on white boxes like you would see in the museum, like museum pedestal, with people popping out of them, and the loops that were written by like a real music, a real artist, a composer, triggered by tongues on the ice cream. So you add this to the fact that the ice cream came from the Big Gay Ice Cream Shop.
Yes. Love that place.
Love it in so many ways.
Love that place.
Salt and also
caramel.
All right. And in this case, spicy chocolate. So our listeners can imagine
it's
what it's like.
A 70s movie.
Yeah, for four people wearing black turtlenecks, totally like Sprocket style, sticking their tongues into spicy, like really spicy chocolate ice cream and triggering. There were a lot of numbers being.
And this is what this is life after the food industry. This is what you do.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, what was I doing trying to sell some damn Eggs Benedict? I'm straight tripping.
You got one eye outside looking for de Blasio, see if he's going to bring back the cabaret.
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? The great thing is I don't have to worry about if this is legal or not, because none of it is legal.
There you go.
And I was like, here, is it legal? No, none of this. Nothing we're doing.
And as we wind down a little bit, we often encourage our talented guests to write things or do things. And you're working on some autobiographical stuff just to get the history of your New York existence out there as a former actor turned entrepreneur turned restaurateur. You have a great backstory about your father and restaurants. But where are people going to get a hold of you next? That's what we
want. Oh, wow. That's a really...
Or a hold of you
well,
now.
Well, first,
really
a hold of you now. Like, is there the website for the space?
There is a website for the space. You can go to Specials on C. And although we're not like running regular programming, we are going to be working with our local community board and a great organization called madeinles.org.
Love them.
Those guys are great. Eric Ho is a great guy.
They make... Transformer freaking what do you call furniture?
Yeah,
and okay. it's they make these things that actually they can be anything.
Ottoman that turns into a mini fridge.
I mean not anything electronic, but I mean it could be a conference table that turns into five benches that turns into seven chairs. It's really amazing what these guys do.
It's really about using these spaces that we have, even
that
if
are
they're
open.
Temporary.
Yeah,
just for a few weeks, and you know, just be able to roll them in and make them work.
And they've worked with nonprofits. They've worked with
they're working with for profits too.
And
for profits,
they worked with pop up shops. But the whole idea is taking this type of furniture that actually kind of, you have to see it, it morphs into stuff.
All right.
No, it's amazing. But no, I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you go to specialsonc.com, you can email us there. Take a look at some of the projects that we have worked on in the past and look forward to seeing what the next iteration is in the future. In the meantime, I'm going to have to stay in touch with you.
There you go. There you go. So, an incredible show. We're wrapping up here. Taking us back in history 20 years all the way to the present day where if you dream it in the New York City of Dreams, then you can achieve it. So, big thank you to our guest, Jim and Rev. Next week, we'll have another guest. We'll do Where's Paldo? And I will fill you in on my search for a job. I'm in between jobs now.
Tell fucking Paul to hire you.
No. You never want to work with friends. You never want to work with friends. I'm going to enjoy some Roberta's pizza, and we're going to keep chatting with our guest off air. But this is Eating Disorder. Email us at forkyouradio@gmail.com. Check us out on all those social media sites.
At forkyouradio on Twitter.
Yes. Instagram, Friendster, MySpace. Tell Mark Zuckerberg or whatever his name is that Eating Disorder is your favorite podcast on the HeritageRadio.org network. And we'll see you soon.
Later on.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.